All right, ready?
All right.
Hey, everyone, I'm Steve.
I just wanted to be there for you.
Yeah, you were there. There.
Let's see, now you won't forget. All right, let's do that again.
I gotta stop laughing now. Hey everyone, I'm Steve.
And I'm Zach, and this is Fireside Swift.
How's it going, Zach?
Oh, it's going real well. How about yourself?
I've been fantastic. It's been a week.
It has. It has been quite the week.
Yeah. You know, have you been on Twitter or anything like that lately?
I have been on Twitter. I try to get on at least once a day just to see what's going on and, you know, stay part of the community, part of the conversation.
Yeah.
How about yourself?
I mean, I know you talk to me on Twitter every so often, and you know, yes. Last couple nights, you know, we've had some interesting conversations.
We have.
This is a little new to me. I'm going to say, like, I haven't really been a Twitter person. Like, I consume Twitter. I don't usually put stuff on Twitter.
Correct.
But, you know, lately, maybe it's because we're doing this podcast and whatnot, but... you know, it's been fun. Like, you know, joke with me on Twitter, I joke back, and, you know, we're starting to get other people from the Swift community talking to us. It's a lot of fun.
I am having a blast. I am much like you. I use Twitter as, like you said, I was consuming it. I was wanting to see what was out there, but I never put any of myself on Twitter. I stayed behind the scenes strictly, and it is because of this podcast. Like, I want to be a bigger part of the community, so, you know, I'm out there talking to people, and it's been fun. There are a lot of cool people out there.
Yeah, there are. Yeah,
and Twitter isn't as scary as I thought it was going to be.
We got to make sure we don't... I mean, right now it's not that scary, but I have a feeling, like, you say one wrong thing, though. Yeah, I hear Twitter comes down on you pretty hard.
That's fine. Bring it, Twitter. After 2 weeks, I think I'm ready.
This is not good.
Is that overconfident?
This is probably the worst way to start this podcast.
I think it's the best way to start this podcast. If we're gonna have a conversation, let's do it. Let's talk.
That's true. Let's.
I'm inviting horribleness, aren't I?
Yeah.
You are.
You're inviting horribleness. The worst people are gonna come seek you out now.
Well, I'll know who to block. Blocking those haters out.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's right.
So did we get any feedback or anything?
We did. Actually, so the YouTuber that I called out last podcast, Sean Allen, he messaged me on Twitter. And he gave us an update. You know, he gave us some feedback on maybe things we could do a little bit better in our show. And he also called out the class keyword on protocols. Do you want to go into that a little bit?
Yeah. He mentioned that on one of his videos, the one on protocols, someone on his comment section called him out for having a retain cycle. And he dove deep into it, a little deeper than I dove into it. I got to the point where I found out this class keyword, you know, solved my problems.
Exactly. And fixed your issue and you're finished.
Yeah. But he found out why. And he actually provided a link. I don't have it on my computer right now, but we'll find that link. We'll put it in the show notes. But basically, the article stated that when you have a protocol, enums, structs, and classes can all adhere to that protocol.
Yes.
But enums and structs are value types.
Okay.
And a class is a reference type. And we're going to get into this deeper into the episode.
It's appropriate, isn't it?
Yeah, it's appropriate. It kind of works for this episode.
Exactly.
We did not plan this.
We will segue right into the topic.
Yeah.
So,
enums and structs are value types and classes are reference types.
Yes.
You can restrict your protocol to only be used by reference types.
So that class, keyword says you can only use this protocol with classes?
Exactly. So if you try to... conform to that protocol with an enum or struct, it'll reject it.
Okay.
And you'll get, the precompiler will show the little red bar with the, you know, stop sign.
Love that thing.
Yeah.
I see it a lot, so I better love it.
But I guess the question is why? Well, yes. The reason why you would have a class protocol is, you know, if you wanted to have weak properties that weak vars that adhere to that protocol, delegates like we were talking about last week. Okay. And so you can't have a weak value type.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, you could have weak weak reference types, but you can't have weak value types. Because a reference type is a pointer, and so it may or may not point to a value, whereas a value always has, something to it. So
right. Well, that, there you go. That makes sense. And thank you, Sean, for that feedback, and we will try to implement the other feedback you said as well, the little tips for our show here.
Yeah, so one of those tips is we spent quite a bit of our time last week talking about code that we were looking at.
Possibly. Possibly. I was excited.
Yeah, we were a little excited about it. And hopefully you enjoyed it. But Zach and I talked about it. We agree that we probably should be talking about code that we wrote that you can't see, particularly if you're driving your car or, walking around somewhere.
Yeah, we don't want you doing that.
Yeah, so we'll still talk about code, obviously, but
we won't go into the specifics.
Yeah,
we can give a high level overview, but we don't need to go line for line like I maybe did.
Yeah, I mean it was fun. I had fun.
It was fun, but if you jump on,
yeah, and if you jump on our GitHub page, you could download that code and go line by line with us if you'd like. But I doubt you want to be doing that while driving.
Yeah, it's. It's big enough that you're downloading this podcast and listening to us. We don't ask you to actually go out and look at the code if you don't want.
Yeah, that's a good point.
You only have to go so far with us. We don't ask for much.
All we want is just say you love us.
That's it. Your undying affection.
Yeah, undying. Yeah.
Undying.
Yeah.
That's never all we ending. Ask.
Just constant. Love and affection. All your money, too, would be nice.
I mean, it would be, but I'm okay stopping at just the love and affection.
I mean, just a, check for a couple $100 would be nice, too. Yeah, just saying.
I mean, I wouldn't turn it down.
I wouldn't turn it down either.
I wouldn't turn it down.
All right. Anyways, value types, reference types. What am I thinking of here? I'm thinking of the different... ways of creating objects within Swift.
You are thinking of classes, structs, and enums, good sir.
Ah, that might be our topic for today.
Classes, structs, and enums, oh my.
Oh my. Okay, so I guess kicking us off, the most common type here is class, right?
Correct. It's one you see in a lot of other languages, so it's taught in a lot of courses coming up, and it's got the broadest base, and it's partly because it is the foundation of object-oriented programming.
Yeah, that's where I first learned of classes, was my first object-oriented programming class in school. Do you know why it's called a class? We don't have that in our notes or anything, but I was just curious if you know.
No, I don't actually. I've never actually thought to question that.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like you're going to school or anything like that. And no. Like, or, the programming, each of the properties are going to school. And so they're
no, class. I was thinking, like the class system that exists.
Oh, certain... socioeconomic classes.
Possibly, but that might be too much of a dive. And those classes really aren't inherited. They're very siloed off. You aren't part of multiple classes, but with classes in Swift or any other object-oriented language for that matter, you inherit.
I don't know. Like, I mean, if you're part of one class, you could potentially, you could move up to other classes, but usually you stay in your own class.
If you move into the next class, you're not keeping the same attributes of the old class.
Yeah, that's true.
So, not really that.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Let's go ahead and let's talk about what classes actually are in Swift then.
Sure. Go for it.
Okay. So, a class in Swift is a way for you to model an object, which we talked about structs last week for a little bit, and we'll talk about it again later. But it's a way you can have different attributes and functionality for a certain type of object.
Yeah.
And then in that object or that class can then be subclassed by other classes, and they will inherit all of the variables and functionality from that parent class.
Yep.
And so okay, go ahead.
I remember this like when I was taught OOP, and it, like the most basic example is like a bicycle.
Correct.
A bicycle is a vehicle, right? It's a vehicle with two wheels. So the fact that it has two wheels is a property, and you can go forward, or you can pedal. We'll say you can pedal, and that would cause you to move forward. So that's a pedaling would be a function or a method that you can use on this object. And you could have other kinds of bikes. You could subclass bike and have a mountain bike, or you could have a road bike instead.
And motorcycle. They have
different properties. Or a motorcycle could be part of bike. Absolutely, it's got a motor on it now, and it has an ignition, and you can go forward. So,
but the point is that all of those objects are still one parent type. Like you can classify every single one of those things as a bike, even if a motorcycle may have a sidecar, which would add an extra wheel, and it like you said, it would have a motor. They would need to have it would have to take gas. If you could figure out a flying bike. Or a unicycle. Does a unicycle count as a bike? I don't know. You'd have to, that would be part of your design.
Yeah. I would say unicycle would not be part of a bike, but it might be a vehicle.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know. I don't ride many unicycles.
Yeah, neither do I.
I don't. So I don't know where we are. If you ride a unicycle, let me know on Twitter how you classify it.
Yeah, that'd be interesting to know. Like, are unicycles just, chopped up bikes?
Right, because, well, a bike is, bicycle, bike, unicycle, yike? I don't know. I'm not sure.
Yeah, yike.
Yike.
That seems right. Yeah.
I'm coining it right here. You heard it first.
Yeah, so, I mean, classes are what we usually use when we program in Swift. Now, when I say we... I'm referring to Zach and I.
Yes.
But the reality is there are groups of programmers that don't necessarily use classes all the time. The functional programmers will use structs and enums more. And maybe that's a good time to get into structs.
Yeah, no, that was a great time to get into structs. Okay. So classes, we talked about how they can be subclassed. Structs cannot. But it's the same kind of idea where it will model an object, right? So you'll still have your variables and your functionality within that struct, but that struct won't be inherited by anything else.
Yeah, but you're not completely left. Like, one of the cool things about programming is the ability to abstract things and to write one thing one place and have other things be able to make use of that. I wanted to say inherit, but that's only for classes.
Yeah, you don't want to say
there,
that.
There is a way for structs to have this kind of pattern as well, and that's through protocols.
Correct.
And like we talked about last week, protocols are very powerful, and your struct can implement many protocols. So those of you who are good at protocol-oriented programming may choose to use just structs and not even go with classes at all.
Exactly. So. Exactly. I love that Swift offers you multiple ways to get to the same endpoint, right? That's really nice to have options.
Yeah. And I remember structs mainly from when I was writing C a lot. There was a point in time when I was teaching C. And in C, you have structs, and you could pass structs around, and we would do that a lot. This is a lot easier to use than C-based structs. There was a lot of gotchas with C-based structs where you can get things wrong. Oh, yeah. Very easy to you know, misalign your memory and whatnot. And
I see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyways, with these structs, it's I definitely see the value in it. I will say that I do not use structs very often in my code.
Nor do I. I'm mainly a class kind of guy. And I think that calls back to the way that I was taught Java. It was basically 100% classes. It was all classes all the time. You know, you can get what you need through that. It was your one-stop shop. That's where you go. You know what you're doing.
Java only has a few primitive types, right? Like,
yes.
And those are the only things that are value typed.
Yes. Yes, yeah. I believe so. It's one of those things right now where I don't think about that all that often. I just use them.
Yeah, I mean, that's, I guess, one of my main beefs with Java is I hate that everything is a reference. And, you know, that's one of the things that's cool about Swift is, like, if I wanted reference-based things, I could have reference-based things. Or I could have value-based things like structs or enums. It's nice to have that choice.
Right. So,
I want to say another really nice thing about value typed objects are they make multi-threading easier, multi-processing easier.
You don't have to worry about changing values in different threads?
Yeah, you don't have to worry about the original object getting mutated on a different thread while you still have a reference to it.
Right. So you're in some background thread running a function. And you're working on an object that's on the main thread. Can you do that? I don't even know.
Oh yeah, you can totally do that.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
I've done that many times.
It sounded right, but it was one of those things that as soon as I said it, I was like, need to call myself out immediately because I'm not sure.
Yeah. In fact, core data. If we ever get to that topic, that'll be a fun one.
Okay.
It is very very easy to be working with a class, an object that is of type, of a class object, and you can be working with that and basically access some of its values on the wrong thread and your whole app comes crashing down.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah, it gets really confusing really fast.
Yeah. Oh man.
Whereas if they were structs, you just make a copy. You just copy it over to another function and you don't even have to worry about the original anymore.
Exactly. So you make what's called a deep copy, right? Like, so it's a completely new object in memory.
I mean, that sounds right. I never heard the term deep copy before.
Really?
That,
deep
that
copy
makes
and
sense
shallow
to me.
Copy. Shallow copy is where multiple pointers will point to the same place in memory.
That makes
a
sense.
A deep copy will completely copy whatever object you're copying over, and so you can manipulate that however you want, and you leave the original object in its space in memory, and it doesn't get touched at all.
Yeah, I've never heard those terms before, but that makes perfect sense to me. Like, woo! Now that I hear them, like, that makes sense.
Mark one for Zach. Yes.
There you go.
Yes. I'm trying to make things better.
Yeah. One little description at a time.
One correct description at a time.
Yeah.
That's a very important keyword.
We're going to find out later that you got something wrong there, though.
No, I know I did. I know I did. And I've already called out Twitter, so my future is not looking bright.
You didn't just call out Twitter. You called out the worst of Twitter. So let's see what happens.
For that to get out, it means people will have to listen, right? So
that's true. That's true.
I mean, that's something.
All right. So are we missing anything about structs?
I don't. Beliefs. Oh, you know what? We can talk about how both classes and structs are initialized.
Okay.
How an object that is is a class is initialized compared to an object of a struct.
Is it different? Because
the way it is defined is different. So
okay.
If you're in a class and you have three attributes, whenever you go to make an object of that class, to have an initializer, for that class to have an initializer, you have to write it out yourself.
Okay.
So you have to go in and write the functionality, self attribute one equals whatever parameter you name for attribute one in the initializer.
Yeah, I've done that. I thought there was a cheat way to do that, but maybe I'm thinking of what you're about to say next.
Well, so it structs, they automatically get that member-wise initializer.
Nice.
So you don't have to go in and define it yourself.
Nice.
Which is kind of cool. It's a little benefit of using a struct, right?
Yeah, I do. I remember reading that. I remember when Swift came out, I remember being on a plane and just like I had downloaded the Swift book and I read through most of it on the plane. And I remember seeing that. I thought that was for classes, but man, that's a nice benefit to have for structs.
Right, right. Just having it there and waiting for you is always nice.
Yeah, that's cool. Okay. And I know one of the differences is that classes have a deinitializer. You don't have that with structs.
That's correct. So a deinitializer means that you can deinitialize an object of a class in your code, and it'll free up that memory.
Okay.
So
you can't do that with a struct at all?
No. A struct stays where it is.
Okay.
So do you want to get into the similarities and differences a little bit more?
Sure. If you've got more, go for it.
Yeah, yeah. So let's go over the similarities first, right? Okay. So both classes and structs will allow you to define properties to store values. Okay. You can write functions or methods in both to define your functionality. Okay.
This is what's been getting me a lot lately. You know, for those of you who've been listening to Fireside Swift, you hear me say function and they go, method a lot. I still struggle with this because in Swift, you always say func, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, func, and then you type out whatever your function name is. But I was trained in school that for object-oriented programming with classes, they are not functions. They are methods.
Yes. And then that sentence, so defining functions to provide functionality, it was a little too redundant. So I actually liked...
Say method instead?
Exactly. Just grammatically, it felt better. So that's what
maybe that's why the professors always taught us to do it that way. I don't know.
Maybe. So, I'm
a little curious about that. And like, I'm also curious, like, if you've got a function on a struct, do you call that a method as well?
I would. I mean, that's
would too.
That's my own particular syntax. And I go back and forth between function and method. They kind of are synonymous to me in my mind, so they mean exactly the same thing. It's the same way as properties and attributes and even variables. You know, if I'm saying, oh, I set this property on this class, I set this attribute on this class, I set this variable on this class, it all kind of means the same thing to me. So I will use those terms interchangeably.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that is...
Variables have kind of a different connotation in Swift now.
You can say constants as well.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know if it's the best way to speak about it, but...
We gotta get our terminology down.
Yeah, and that's one of the good things about the podcast, right? Like, it's gonna force us to develop better habits.
I'd like to think so.
Either that or we'll just stay the way we are and we won't have to worry about it.
Keep perpetuating terrible grammatical.
The awfulness? Yeah. I mean, as long as Twitter doesn't call you out, you're fine.
Yeah, right? Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So, I mean, as long as that happens, then we can just keep on moving along and we won't have anything to worry about.
Yeah, I'm good with that.
Love it.
All right. So that was we were talking about functions and or methods. Both of them can have that. What else?
So they can both be extended to expand their functionality.
Okay.
Again, that's something we spoke about last week with protocols. Protocols can be extended as well.
Yep.
And so...
both of them can adhere to protocols.
Yes, both can adhere to protocols. And what you're basically doing is creating a new type. So you can define a new class of type bike, or a new struct of type car. Yeah. And those would be types just like an int or a bool.
Yep.
So that's basically what you're doing at the most, I'll say it again, base level.
Yep.
Some of the differences, only classes can be inherited. So you cannot inherit a struct. with another strike.
And this is new to me too. We were talking about this before the show, and Zach said something about that. Wait, no, I thought strikes could inherit too. And yeah, he set me straight. So I'll give him credit for that.
Oh, it wasn't even on air?
No, that was not him on air. At least I don't think it was.
That's all right.
Yeah, so yeah, I learned something here. I honestly thought that structs were just like classes and they could just inherit from another struct, but no, that's not the case.
Not true. If you're going to inherit with a struct, you'll have to do it through a protocol.
Yeah.
So in classes, they have the ability to be typecast. And I kind of understand typecast, but not totally. Do you have a better foundation?
Okay, so typecasting.
If I can put you on the spot real quick.
Yeah. It comes from the fact that classes are actually just pointers to places in memory. And so just because I'm saying that it's pointing to, oh gosh, I'm trying to think of something.
Just throw anything out there.
I know, I'm thinking. Whatever class, we'll just say like a UI button. Okay, so it's pointed to a UI button. And I could literally say, nope, that's not a UI button. That's actually a pointer to a UI label.
Okay.
And it will literally try to take those, you know, bits after that pointer and turn it into a UI label.
Interesting. That's
probably a terrible example because there's not... I'd love to think of an actual reason to use this in Swift because I really haven't much.
Yes.
I mean, there is the any type, which means that it's just a pointer to somewhere in memory.
Right.
And maybe you know it's a string. Now, this is probably the better example here. You know it's a string, or you know it's a UI button. It's an any type. But the program doesn't know it's particularly at runtime. And so you have to say, I know that's a UI button. Therefore, I'm going to cast it as a UI button. I'm going to say that this pointer is actually a button, and you know, all the memory addresses are the same UI button after this point.
I have actually done this before. I just didn't know what the formal name was.
Yeah.
So I have a little project, and there are some places where, and I'm using core data, and I have to define what type of uint I'm using as for some attributes in it.
Okay.
And in my code, the variables that I'm manipulating with that stored data is of type int. So okay. I actually have to cast what is stored as a uint to a type int, or just to int.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Exactly. It's more common in other languages like Objective-C. We had to cast things all the time. That was just a part of life.
Right.
Java is, like, if you do Android programming, it is a core foundation of Java.
Yes.
Because you find, like, a reference to, like, we'll take a button, for example. Android has a type of class called button, and you usually have those buttons in your XML that defines your layout. And then you find it by an ID, which is an integer,
mm-hmm.
and it returns a pointer or reference to that button. And you have to say, I know that's a button. And so you put in parentheses, button. And so from then on, you know it's a button. But if you got that wrong, and it's actually a label instead of a button, guess what? Your code's going to crash.
Exactly. Like,
as soon as you start doing something with it.
What I seem to do a lot of in Java, as far as typecasting goes, is string to ints. And then ints back to string. There's a lot of that.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's not as common in Swift. I'd love to hear some use cases, too, where this is more common, but... I've found that I've done less of it with Swift just because of its type system.
Safety. It'll make sure you're not breaking things before you run it, right?
Yeah, there's less ambiguousness about the types.
Exactly.
Swift. At least I've noticed that in my code.
It may not be the way everybody's. I agree. And then I guess the last difference between classes and structs would be that reference counting will allow you to have more than one reference to a class instance. So you can have multiple references to that one object in memory, whereas a struct, it's just the one.
Yeah.
And this kind of goes back to the class protocol discussion we had earlier.
Yeah. And this kind of goes into ARC automatic reference counting as well. Most people have heard of garbage collection as a means of, I'm not using this class anymore or this object anymore, and there's a process that runs in the operating system that will clean up any unused memory after a certain point in time.
Did you just use air quotes for cleanup?
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay, just making sure. but you have to call yourself out on that kind of stuff. Yeah, this is radio. Yeah,
air quotes. It's
very, very hard air quotes. Like I threw out a knuckle.
Yeah. But in iOS, we don't have garbage collection. We use something called ARC, or automatic reference counting. And basically, anytime this reference, this object gets referenced, you know, another object owns this other object, it increments that reference count. And as soon as that reference count goes down to zero, then the operating system will then deinitialize that variable,
right,
or that object,
right.
And so I think that's why it's so important. Like, so the main thing is, like, we were talking about weak variables.
Yes.
Why it's so important to have an understanding of weak and strong, it's because you could have object A have a reference to object, we'll say object C,
and then I like what you did there.
Yeah, object B can also have a reference to object C. And when object A gets deinitialized, because object B has a reference to object C still exists. As soon as object B gets deinitialized, object C gets deinitialized because its reference count went down to zero, and so it gets collected. Now, let's take another instance where object A has a reference to object B.
Mm-hmm.
And object B has a reference to object A.
Yes.
As soon as object A gets deinitialized, or its reference count goes to zero, oh wait, it can't because it has a reference, because B has a reference count to it. Yeah, you know, a reference to it.
Exactly.
And so B, if its reference count went down to zero, it would deinitialize and take down object A, but it can't. Like, they have references to each other.
Exactly.
So if object A had a weak reference to object B, and object B had a strong reference to object A, the weak reference does not increment the reference count in object B, and so B could be deinitialized and take down A with it.
Okay.
That's how you avoid those, we call them retain cycles, where objects will exist regardless of what the rest of your app is doing, because they reference each other.
Okay, and we may have to go into more detail on that a little bit later. Maybe,
yeah, it's a tough discussion to
in
podcasting.
Cram into, like, five, yeah, exactly.
Not even just to cram it. This is tough to talk about and not show, like, diagrams of this.
Exactly.
But we could probably try to tackle it later.
Yeah, I mean, I have faith in us.
Maybe I do.
Come on.
We'll see.
All right. So what do we have left?
So we've got enums left. So
enums
are interesting. Like, they're a type. They're just like structs and classes. They create, you know, when you create an enum, you're basically creating a type. Enums are a value type, so they're very much like structs.
Okay.
But they have some peculiarities to them.
They're very different than a struct or a class.
Yeah. They're defined using cases. So. Oh, jeez, how do I say this? if you've ever used enums in C, have you used enums in C, Jet?
I have not. I've barely touched C.
Okay. Java has enums, right?
I've never used one. If it does.
I think it does, but I think it's really weird.
It may.
Okay, so in C, and this is going back, and I'm probably going to butcher this, but you have an enum, and it's always an integer. And your cases, each one of those increments, and I believe you specify the first one, but you don't have to specify the other ones, and you might be able to get specific about what the value is for the ones after, you know, every single one of them possibly.
Okay.
But it's a way for you to say, like, you know, case this, case, you know, case A, case B, case C, case D, and A would be 0 and D would be 4, and you don't have to think about it. You don't have to, like, actually label them.
Right.
Okay. And so, yeah, it's just, it's a way of, like, I have maybe 3 different states or 4 different states, and I don't have to, you know, do any weird, you know, string comparisons or anything like that to make sure that these states are, you know, that this, the program is in the state that I want it to be in. You're really just comparing integers, which is a really easy compare for, you know, the program to do.
Yes, and as a developer, it's easier for you to understand what you're doing in your code just by reading what it says, right?
Yeah. So yeah. Oh yeah. And it, and you get the benefit of the precompiler and all that good stuff.
Exactly.
In Swift, we can have our enum be of any type,
okay,
which I found to be incredibly interesting. So it could be of type int, it could be of type string, it could be all sorts of types. Maybe I shouldn't say any type, but...
And it doesn't even have to be of a type, right?
Or I believe, if you don't specify a type, I know you can do that. I don't know what happens under the hood.
Right.
I know if you, like, specify that it's an integer, you can ask for its raw value.
Okay.
And it'll spit back integers. I'm curious that if you don't specify and you ask for the raw value, I wonder what it gives you back.
I don't know.
Yeah, I never tried that. Interesting. Maybe I'll try that someday.
You probably don't need to. You seem like you're doing okay really, just far.
It doesn't matter. It'd be nice to know what goes on back there, but I don't care too much.
Well, I mean, so, I don't want to teach you how to break things.
Yeah. No, it's fun to break things. Talk about. Like, I'm an engineer. That's all I do is I mean, break things.
That is true. We break things break down, them, figure how it works, and then put it back together in a different way.
No. You try to put it back together. Yeah, exactly. That's the key.
That's why I said in a different way, because that's just a nicer way of putting that, right? Like, you're like, oh, no, I put it back together, and then you have the 7 screws left over.
Yeah, exactly.
Where did these go? Obviously, they weren't needed.
They weren't necessary.
Right? It's working as intended.
Yep.
Or the classic, it works on my machine.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, right?
Exactly.
So I know I used enums in a really cool way on one of my current projects. We're working with external printers. And
oh, okay.
These external printers, the SDK with that will... when you talk to the printer, it will spit back an integer as the error. And the error could be 0 for there is no error to all. There was over 50 different error types. And you know what I could have done is just taken that integer and passed it around
and
somewhere said, you know, put a big, huge if else, you know.
Yeah, that sounds awful.
Yeah, if 0 equals no, you know, if the error is equal to zeros, then, you know, don't show an error message. And
right.
If it's equal to 1, show this error message.
Because anywhere in your code where you have to check that error message, that's going to bloat your code by, what, 100 plus lines just by default?
Oh, yeah.
Just by having it in there.
Yeah, and how do I know that I caught them all?
Exactly.
So what I did is I made an enum for error type. Yeah, particularly this, like, printer error type. And so I've got this enum, and I filled in with all the cases that I knew of, and I did, made it a type integer, and then I made sure I set each error as it is in the documentation. I literally copied the error command that they had in there. As,
nice.
Yeah, so it would be really obvious, you know, right. Go to this page, and here's this error.
Right.
And and it's integer value, and then one of the cool things you could do with enums is you can't have what's that called properties with values on them, right? What's that? Is that just the right way of saying that?
Properties with values on them.
Well, just a property that has a value.
Yeah.
You can't do that.
So you can't just have a default.
Yeah,
value.
You can't just say like, well, in this case, like description is equal to, and then put a string there. You can't do that. But you could have computed properties.
Okay.
And so what I wanted is I wanted, okay, so if I have an enum, I want to be able to, you know, ask it what the description should be. You know, what should be the error description? And so I have a variable called description, and I have a computed property where I run a switch on itself. And so when you, and that's one of the really great things about enums.
Oh, I love
Swift.
Switching on enums.
Switching on enums is the coolest thing in the world, because you are required, well, you're required to either have a case for every one of the cases in the enum,
yes,
or provide a default somewhere in there.
Exactly.
So as long as you don't include default in your switch statement, the precompiler will make sure that you have kept covered every case.
So I have a question real quick.
Go for it.
If you're switching on an enum, can you check for multiple cases at the same time? So if you had case 1, 2, and 3, could you check for cases 1 and 2 and then do some functionality, whether, you know, if it is 1 or 2?
Yes.
Okay, that's cool.
I don't remember the syntax. I think it's like a comma or something like that.
You could also
have it fall through. So I know that's a way of doing
so
it too.
So you can hit multiple cases if you need to?
Yeah. And another thing is, like, in most languages, when you do a switch statement, you have to provide a break.
Break, yes.
Swift automatically assumes you're doing a break, and so you have to provide fall through is the command for it to fall through.
Which, personally, I like better. Because when I'm switching, I usually want it to stop running once it hits that case. I don't want it to anymore. And there are corner cases where I would want it to fall through, but it makes more sense to cover the majority as default.
Yep.
And then call out what you do as a corner case specifically.
Yep. Yep. So. And I love that about it. So anyways, I had this computed property that returned the error message that I wanted for every single one of these errors.
Sweet.
And so whenever I got this error that pops up, I could just pass that enum around to any object that cared about it. And, you know, if ever I needed the message, I could just pull it out. Yeah,
wow,
it was really nice.
That's awesome.
Made it super easy, to be honest. Like, that could have been really a painful part of the experience. And it wasn't that bad at all.
That seems incredibly powerful.
Yeah. Yeah, and I often will just make enums, you know, if I've, particularly like if I'm trying to keep track of state. Remember, everyone, I'm kind of old school in the sense that I like to do object-oriented programming. So state is a thing for me. I'm not into reactive programming yet.
I'm the same.
I'm sure you reactive people out there are like,
the same way.
You know, don't worry about state. You know, I don't know. Like, I still
need to know what I need to draw a state diagram of my code at any given time. Yeah.
Yeah. And this is something maybe I'd love to get into someday, is like, you know, the differences between like reactive type programming and other type of programming, and why I'm so resistant to it or not. I don't know. It sounds really cool, and I've done some of the stuff using like Firebase, and I like that kind of thing, but I just can't get myself to think that way.
It's hard to switch, right?
Yeah, like, it really is, and I think all these different methods, like the different architectures, and, you know, I don't know what OOP compared to functional would be, if that's an architecture, just a philosophy of coding.
Yeah,
they're all designed to help us understand computers, right?
Exactly.
Not one's not better than the other.
No.
It's up for us to understand and for us to write better code. And so whatever helps you write is the right way to code for you.
I agree completely. And that's it's a beautiful thing that we all don't code the same way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I
shows the differences in the way we think.
Exactly. Exactly.
Take that, computers.
And
AI, you're not gonna take us over. We're all different.
Come on, AI, get out of here with your robots and stuff. Your crazy Amazon drones delivering my.
No, that's a good thing. Keep doing that.
Amazon Prime.
Yeah, well, keep delivering our Amazon Prime stuff.
That's true. I'm waiting for someone to steal one of those drones. Just like
I'm just waiting for somebody to shoot it out of the sky. Like that's
true too.
How often does that happen? Like I see a drone coming by with a package. I'm gonna take that thing out just so I get the package. Like I want a new thing, whatever that is.
You have no idea what's in the package. It's a closed box, and so you have to know what's in it.
It's like Christmas.
Exactly.
You know, what did Santa drone bring me today?
A really Santa drone. Really random Christmas.
Yeah.
You have to go through a little more work to get it.
I mean, you've got to be a good shot too, right?
Yeah. Oh, because wouldn't that be terrible if you hit the package and not the drone?
Oh, that's true. You might shoot whatever it is of value.
Yeah, and then you've wasted time and ammunition.
I know.
No one wants that.
Do you think? There's got to be somebody in Amazon whose entire job is to worry about the safety of the drones, right?
Yes. Oh, they spent way too much money on it to not have that happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. We should probably get back to enums before we go way off the rails.
Oh, my mind is just like totally on this right now. You go ahead and I'll just keep thinking about this.
Okay, so while Steven is staring mindlessly out the window waiting for a drone to fly by so he can pirate its payload, we can talk a little bit about associated values, which I think are an interesting part of an enum.
Okay, what's an associated value?
Okay, so you were talking about cases, right?
Okay, yeah.
So each case can have what's called an associated value inside the enum itself. And so that will let you define multiple types inside of the enum. So I was reading through Apple's documentation, and they used a barcode as an example. And so you can have two different kinds of barcode. There's the traditional 2D barcode that you see, you know, that you've seen for forever on all the packages with the numbers and the lines.
Okay.
Or you can have the newer style QR style barcode, you know?
Yep.
And so the 2D barcode is defined as a series of four integers. And those are at the bottom of every barcode. And a QR barcode is defined as a string. So you could have an enum called barcode, and then inside that have, you know, case, 2D, and then in parentheses, write int. And you'll know you're talking about a 2D barcode that you can pass those values into.
Okay.
And then for QR, you would have the same thing, but string.
Okay.
And so it'll let you switch on an actual type instead of the case, I guess. I haven't worked much with that or at all, but I think it's a really interesting a topic.
That sounds particularly powerful.
Yes, I agree.
I was trying to
come up with my own example because the barcode one is a little dry, and I'm not that kind of guy, and I couldn't. Just to be 100% honest, I was like, I don't know. We'll just go with what Apple says, and they probably explain it a lot better than I do anyway. And we will have the link to that in the show notes. So if you want to go take a look at it, you can just click the link.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's something that I've not done yet. I remember reading over that and going, okay, this is interesting, but I'm not sure when I would use it.
Right.
I mean, besides barcodes, because it's obvious for barcodes now, right?
Exactly. Exactly. And I know there's probably another obvious one out there that I'm just not thinking of. So I did. I took the easy way out and said, you know what? This will get the job done. Let's go with it this way.
Yeah.
So, and on a personal note, I feel like enums are probably the most constrictive of the types we've spoken about tonight.
Yeah.
Since it's kind of like a one-shot wonder, right? Like, it's one thing, but it does it really, really well.
Yeah, yeah, I agree with that. You know, it's funny because, like, I use classes and enums all the time, and I never use structs, but you're right. I think that enums are far more restrictive than structs are.
Right, because with an enum, and I could be very, very wrong about this, and that's that will be painfully obvious to many of you if I am, and I apologize in advance. So with an enum, you're basically just describing state, and that's it, right?
That's how I've used them. I'm sure there are other ways to think about it.
And so it's got its niche, and it's needed in that niche. But if you want, if you're looking for something to do, you know, an actual object, something you can pass a value to and have it maintain that value, I guess an enum could technically do that, but you wouldn't be able to do as much with that value as you would with a class or a struct.
Yeah, I mean, like, we were, you know, what was the one thing that we said that enums could not do? It was, like, have the property that had a value associated with it.
Yes.
Well,
which is not the same as an associated value.
Yeah. So I'm just, my English today is not so good.
I know talking good.
I know talking good at all. Anyways, you can't have a property and provide a value for it, but you could have a computed property where you return a value.
Right.
So you could have basically, you know, computed properties and provide a default value as well. So
okay.
If you really wanted to, you could go that route with enums.
Like I said, it's good to have those options.
Yeah. I think enums are far more powerful than I use them for.
I'm sure that's the case. I feel like there are corner cases to each one of these three things we talked about tonight that I never use, and I'm thinking, why is this even in here? And maybe like 95% of the developer base doesn't use, you know, a class for this one thing, but the 5% that does use a class to do those corner case things absolutely loves it, you know, and they can't understand why the other 95% of us can't think to use it that way.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so true. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I've got my ways of programming, and I look at other people the way they code. I'm like, how do you do? Like, why don't you do it this way? Just do it this way. And the reality is, you know, I could be completely wrong. They might be doing it the absolute right way.
And it goes back to they're doing what works best for them.
Exactly.
And, you know, there are times when one way is better than another, but I feel like there's a lot of gray area there. And there's a lot of room for everybody to exist.
That's true.
You know?
That's absolutely true.
Just want to get along with everybody. It's the Fireside Swift motto.
Yeah.
Just getting along with everybody.
Yeah. It's a good motto.
Except for the people on blogging on Twitter. I didn't know
we had a motto, but I guess that's our motto. Right?
It's gonna be. It has to be. I'm going to get it tattooed.
Yeah. Oh, geez. Okay.
I'm going all in.
Why would you get it tattooed when you could easily get it branded?
Oh, that's true. That is true.
I mean, that includes fire.
Oh, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yes, I love the way you think. And in Texas, we have just a multitude of brands.
Yeah.
Everywhere.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh, man. Great. Now I'm going to have to design a Fireside Swift brand.
Oh, my God. Please don't.
I love it. It'll be perfect.
All right. So,
is there anything else you want to tackle tonight?
I think we pretty well covered that. I can't think of... I mean, I know we're kind of just scratching the surface on a lot of these things.
Yeah, that's the thing about the podcast, right? Like, we don't have a ton of time to go do deep dives on everything. And so these may be something that we revisit later. And
yeah, that's what I was thinking. Like, maybe one day, maybe we learn more about enums and we find out something really cool to do with enums. We'll spend an episode talking about how cool that thing was. Structs, I can already think of functional programming that we could cover. I would definitely need to learn more about it, but that's something we could definitely go into one of these days.
Awesome. Well, so, I like the idea of keeping our options open.
Yeah.
Very nice.
So to reiterate, classes are reference types.
Yes.
Enums and structs are value types. What else can I say about this? Classes can inherit while... all three of them can inherit, or not inherit, can adhere to protocols.
Yes.
But only classes can subclass other classes.
Correct.
Structs. What can I say about structs that are specific? I think we kind of covered
that. Yeah, we kind of got it. I mean, it gets its own initializer.
Yeah, okay, it gets its own initializer. That's special about it. Yeah,
that's a thing.
Classes
that it gets.
Have deinitializers. Yep. None of the other ones have that. Which, enums can only be defined or must have cases within it to define it.
Exactly.
I think
that's a good, like, just very, like, 5,000 foot view.
Okay.
Quick rundown, just to kind of end the show. I like it.
Cool.
I like it.
All right.
Very nice.
All right. So, anything else we're missing or we want to talk about? I mean, we don't need to talk about classes, enums, and structs anymore, right? So.
No, we're done. We've covered it. We're good.
All right, cool.
We're good.
Cool. So you can reach me on Twitter at SW. Yeah, I want to say my name. At SW Berard. That's B as in boy, E-R-A-R-D, as in dog.
And I am at ZFalgu1. That's Z-F as in Frank. ALGOUT and the number one. And we also have.
Wait. I've been meaning to ask this. Were you not able to get that without the one? Or
I was not. It was very unfortunate. The one has to be there, right? And I feel like that. I feel so bad that it is there. I'm just. Why?
I just want to know who this other ZFalgu is. Like,
there's so many ZFalgus. So many.
Really? Yeah. Is that a common last name?
In Louisiana.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you'll run into a lot of us around there.
Interesting.
South, in Louisiana, there's quite a few. It's a little enclave.
All right, good to know.
Yeah, that's what happens when you have a Cajun last name, right?
I'm glad I know somebody who's got a large family out there. So.
Oh yeah. We usually run into, you know, outside of the close family, we'll hit, you know, if we go to New Orleans, we'll see a third or fourth cousin somewhere, usually.
Nice.
it's just how it goes.
All right, cool.
We also have a show-specific Twitter.
We do, yeah.
And that is at @fireside_swift.
Yeah, and I have to say, I rarely do anything with it. Zach has been managing that, and he's been doing a fantastic job.
I'm trying, like I said, Twitter is kind of a new world for me. I'm trying to just get out there and kind of grow the show and communicate with our followers. I think we're above 30 now, so that makes me feel real good. But I look at our download numbers, and I see a pretty large disparity there. And so I'm waiting. I'm waiting for the love on Twitter. I know I kind of called Twitter out earlier, but now I'm looking for the people that are, you know, that are lovers and not fighters.
Yeah.
So
please,
come on.
Please, no fighters.
No fighters. So yeah, that's at @fireside_swift.
One of the things we haven't asked for yet, I mean, it's episode 3. We love everybody who listens to us. It'd be great if some of you could get on iTunes and, give us a review, hopefully a positive review.
Star, 5 star, I'm okay with anything at this point. Like,
but it'd be great. That would help get the word out to other people that are interested in learning this stuff.
Exactly. The thing about a 1-star review is that's where we're going to learn, right? We learn from our mistakes.
I'm going to say no 1-star reviews.
All right. You can say no 1-star reviews.
If you want to give us a 1-star review, please talk to us first. We can change.
I mean, we're very malleable.
But 5-star reviews help us get out more.
And we're trying to grow this community. We're doing what we can. I would love to meet more people and just interact with everybody. I know I'm still new to Swift. I'm sure that comes through very well in the podcast. And the thing that I was missing when I started was a group of people that I can go to and talk to about, you know, the issues I was having. Even little things like, hey, I need to learn more about a class. Do you have any good references? And, you know, they would point me in the right direction. So
reference type.
Exactly. I'm glad you got that. I'm so happy you got that. I threw it out there, just fingers crossed, and you picked up on it. Thank you. And so, you know, I'm hoping we can be those people for somebody out there.
Yeah. Yeah.
I agree. You know, tell your friends, leave a review.
Speaking of speaking of communities, we are part of the SwiftCoders network.
Yes, we are.
So that's the SwiftCoders podcast. There's a couple other shows coming out soon.
Yes.
Out already? Should I know this? I should know this.
There are a few. I don't think they're out already. I think there's one that's in review currently.
Gotcha.
But you should keep an eye out for that. Do we know the name?
I want to say it's the Learn Swift podcast.
Yeah, I believe so. I believe it's the Learn Swift podcast. We will update everybody more when it comes out. So next week.
So that's Steven's podcast. Rob's is the...
The Junior Dev.
Junior Dev podcast. So that, you know, expect both of those to come out very soon. Maybe they'll be out by the time that we get this
exactly.
episode.
And so we'll just look like we're wrong, which is fine. Yeah, we're very used to
totally
that.
Totally cool with that.
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, so please give them some love too. They're fantastic people, and yeah, this is a great community to be a part of.
I know. I love it. I love it. It's a good group of people.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us this evening, and we'll see you next week.
Yeah. Hey, Steve.
Yeah.
Play that funky music. Episode 3 was when Anakin went all crazy and killed all the younglings.
I don't know what you're talking about. I mean, Episode 3 was when Luke Skywalker rescued Han Solo and the Wookiee from Jabba the Hutt, and they blow up Star Destroyer number 2, or Death Star number 2.
Episode 3 was...
you're talking about the third Star Wars movie,
I mean,
right?
Episode 3 had Luke in it. Briefly.
No, you're talking about the third Star Wars movie, right?
I'm talking about Episode 3 of
Star Wars 3.
Have you forgotten the first three episodes, Steven?
Forgotten? I remember the first three Star Wars very clearly. So the Star Wars was Luke Skywalker, going to the Death Star and rescuing Princess Leia, and then they blow it up in the end. Star Wars 2 is when he talks to a Muppet goes to a tree and somehow kills a fake father. And then he finds out his father is actually Darth Vader. And then,
spoilers!
I know.
For Episode 5.
And then Episode 3 was when, Han Solo is captured, so Luke Skywalker goes and rescues him. And then... they go to Ewok land and blow up Star Destroyer or Death Star number 2. And then Episode 4 is about a girl named Rey. And they blow up Super Planet Death Star. So
Can I tell you about pod racing?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Pod racing. Everybody needs to go pod racing. Let's go pod racing. Yeah.
Is that like those hyperbolic chambers?
It's
to go to sleep or something.
No. It's something completely different.
Is this like there's peas in a pod? Like
there's peas. It's these and you machines,
race.
And you're flying, and they're connected, and you got to race them
Are you throwing?
So
peas?
Good, and there's like a little Anakin, and he's driving, and then there's this dude who uses his feet as hands.
I don't know what you're talking about. And there's, none of this makes any sense to me.
And then there's Jar Jar Binks, who's like the best cinematic character.
Jar Jar Binks? Like peanut butter jar or like pickle jar?
Slightly racist Jar Jar Binks.
And Binks?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't.
So, speaking of...
are there beaks in the jar?
Jar Jar Binks. Do you know what his final fate was?
I don't know who this character is, but go ahead.
So, let's say there was a character that was kind of universally hated.
Okay.
Just, let's put it out there. If it were to happen, how do you think that character may not have met his end, but definitely is... like living out his final fate. How would you suspect that would happen?
I would expect eaten by a whale.
That's a good guess. His people did live underwater, so that's solid. Okay. He is actually a street performer, like a street clown who's just sad all the time in one of the planets.
What?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, two, in one of the books, two characters, like, walk by and they hear his famous lines, and he just is sitting there, like, crying all of the time about how he led to, like, the rise of the dark side, basically. And because, nice. Yeah, for his part in creating Darth Vader, his people expelled him from the community.
Oh, nice. Did you see those YouTube videos where, like, it was like Jar Jar Binks is actually the Sith Lord?
Yes.
Like, that makes more sense to me.
It really does. It really does.
He's like a drunken fighter, you know, like, the way he, like, sort of fights, but, like, he's actually, like, actually fighting really well, but it looks like he's terrible.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that at least makes that character worthwhile, like, meaningful.
Yeah, that actually almost makes those terrible excuses for not movies to be in existence.
Oh, I know. They're so bad. Yeah. They're so, so bad.
Yeah.